Welcome to the Sports Ethos LA Chargers podcast, Championship Sunday edition, along with Brandon, who I think probably is going to have the best podcast of his entire life. This is the first time. This is the first time in our iteration that, you know, the Eagles have made the Super Bowl. Of course, we are here with Will and Shane as well. I want to start with a round table. There's a few things I want to get to with all these different games. But first off, how are you guys all doing? Are you guys' breath down to normal level? Because mine's not.
I can remember the last time I actually watched an NFC Championship game for my birds and actually not had a stroke watching it.
I literally can't calm down, but I'm really excited to get into this. So let's start with this, right? And Brandon, I will go to you first on this, because this is something that you and I talked about back in Thanksgiving that I think really resonated today with the Chiefs game. And we talk about this idea, you and I have harped on this all year, of the chess match of football and how there's a lot of risk and a lot of reward that these teams kind of go through, particularly in third and fourth down situations. And to me, this felt very much like the game. This is Steve Spagnuolo's game. And it was because he was like a step ahead of everything. And the thing is, I don't think there's any defensive coordinator, probably of the last 10 to 15 years, at least in our lifetime, our young lifetimes, that trusts their defense as much as Spags does.
Yeah. I mean, I said it before, even when I was a little kid watching the Giants and Spags was there, I was like, damn, man, you know, Spags always found a way to make Eagles Giants games a living hell for me as a little kid. I mean, we would still come out on the right side of things, but you know, Spags is just a different animal, because he's one of the few coaches in the league where I've never seen a guy disguise his blitzes more, like fake a blitz from one side and have it come from the other. Or he knows the offensive line to attack, what the weakest part is, constantly changing up looks. He'll also fake a blitz and drop guys back. They have such fast players on their defense that, you know, that works. So he's, you know, the way he trusts his defense on third and fourth down to just get stops to win games. This is why I said all year, the Chiefs are not good offensively this year. They played okay tonight, but that's because the Bills' defense is awful. But you think about it, you know, that defense is what's won them a lot of their championships, not their offense. Their defense has made time and time again drive or two to seal it, or they've just played a great game overall. So I can't sit here, and that's probably one of the earliest keys to the game on Philly's side of things. If you want to beat the Chiefs, you've got to answer the blitz. And it's been better in football this year than Philly at answering the blitz. So this is going to be an interesting matchup we've got going on. But as of right now, to open this show, I mean, Spagnuolo is for a reason. He's a Hall of Fame coach for a reason. He's gonna, you know, he's gonna go right into the hall when he decides to hang it up, which is probably not gonna be anytime soon anyway. He's not done winning Super Bowls, so you know, we got our work cut out for us. But when it comes to third and fourth down, when he knows how to get his defense to close a game, and he's been the best at doing that for the last 15, almost 20 years. So you know, it is what it is. We got to answer the bell in about 2 weeks.
Shane, as a former quarterback coach, I mean, he's got to be hell for a quarterback. I mean, what do you notice schematically with what he does that's different from the rest of the 31 defensive coordinators in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I notice with him is how, you know, we always talk about, like, how an offense can beat you in multiple ways. He's one of the rare guys where he on defense can beat you multiple ways, because yeah, they play great zone coverage and In man, they're really sticky. Maybe not quite as much as last year, but still really good. But the biggest thing is how he uses blitzes. Because, normally, most of the time when you blitz, you send five or six guys and just, it's just an extra guy. And it's like, okay, well, there you go. But he uses a lot of, guys that you wouldn't necessarily expect, like a safety. And he kind of disguises it like he's, lining up in a 4-4 look on defense, like a fourth linebacker almost, and then sends him through. You get five guys up on the line who have their own blocking assignment, and then he just sneaks through the hole. That's what happened at the end there when Allen had to throw it away. So, it's most teams don't really have an answer for that because, you got to have a receiver that's quick enough to get open, and you got to hope, that that said receivers are not being covered, which when you got guys like Trent McDuffie and Justin Reed in your secondary, chances are they will be. So, yeah, it's frustrating as a quarterback, especially when you have a decent offensive line like Buffalo does. It's not amazing, but they're good. And that's, I just think Buffalo in general, I just feel like they didn't quite have, the speedy receivers or even the physical receivers that you need to really combat that effectively, like throughout the whole game. So that's something they'll have to address in the offseason. but the biggest problem for them was the secondary. Hell, even tonight, just the back seven in general was pretty rough.
I thought the linebackers played a really bad game. It was one of the first times where I was like, I think even the linebackers are too slow and don't have enough physicality to get with a guy like Xavier Worthy, for instance.
Right. That's their biggest area they're going to have to address. Because Kansas City offensively has not been good this year. So the fact that you gave up 32 to them is pretty bad. and it wasn't even like anybody on Kansas City's offense played a particularly good game. It was just, little by little, they were able to wear him down. So, it's going to be an interesting Super Bowl, though. That's for sure. Rematch of 2 years ago. That was one of the best Super Bowls I've seen in my life yet.
It's funny how the Eagles ended up playing a lot of those Super Bowls like that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
For sure.
I was hoping for a slightly different outcome in that one, but still. it was still a great game.
And this time so it's Saquon Barkley.
God. Yeah. And the defense is a lot better this time around.
Yeah.
And Kansas City offensively is nowhere near what they were then. So
I'm still waiting, but okay. It is what it is.
will you still feel confident in Kansas City? What kind of put you over that piece with Kansas City? Not only you can speak on Spagnuolo, but what do you see in Kansas City that's different in years past, that's similar, that gives you confidence for Kansas City going to the Super Bowl?
Well, I think it's because of one man. He's number 15, and he is Patrick Mahomes. You see, last time when they was facing the Eagles, honestly, it was a chance. Like, Eagles were the heavy favorites during that point. They had a stack offense, defense, basically the same thing like they have right now, except, you know, they have Saquon, but, you know, they still had a stack offense in the past when they faced her in the Super Bowl. And I feel like with Mahomes, basically, if you have Mahomes, you basically can do basically anything possible if you need it. Because honestly, with Mahomes, if he's telling you, hey, Mahomes, take me to the promised land, take me to the, give me the closest game out, give me the field goal range, and Mahomes basically gets you that. And I feel like Mahomes always been a type of guy that been, you know, a lot of Osh's tried, especially for this year. Obviously, they didn't have the best year offensively. But at the same time, like, usually they could put points up. They had some weapons. They still have weapons, and they still was able to produce at least points necessary for them to win. Like, you know, the offense wasn't that good, but like they always find a chance to try to get a win. And even during that undefeated streak that they had, like, you know, some of it is out of luck, but others is out of just because the other team were just made mistakes. And I feel like basically if you have Mahomes under center, then you have a chance. And also, besides, we're speaking to Panola with how his defense, how he constructed his defense. Like, if you have those two guys, like I said in the chat, then basically you have a chance to win a Super Bowl and probably win it all. So that's just my two cents on it.
Yeah, that's sort of how I feel. I mean, look, I think it's fair to say that the confidence is every year with the Chiefs is low, but it is, you know, it is Kansas City. Before we get to the Eagles side of this, I want to touch on the Commanders because, I mean, for how impressive their season was, and I totally understand, like, it was a great year and all this stuff, I think playing that game the way they did, to me, it's just inexcusable. Like, I just think it's completely inexcusable. Like, the turnovers,
I expected better too.
Yeah, I just like the turnovers, they felt lost from the opening snap. And I wasn't expecting that, particularly with those two teams being in the same division. Like, they kind of felt lost in the moment, which, again, look, it's a young team. I get that. But to me, I still think it's incredibly inexcusable. And and honestly, look, if this was your standard, like, Detroit Lions, and they played like this, a lot of people would have that same reaction of, like, this is inexcusable. I'm going to have that same thought process here with the Commanders. I just think what they did today in every facet was massively inexcusable. Shane, do you agree?
Yeah. But at the same time, it's, you know... I always say this every year, one of the four teams in the conference championship is definitely a tier below the others.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, because I feel like most years there's like four teams where you're like, yeah, I can see them winning a Super Bowl. For me this year, it was when we get to like the start of the playoffs, obviously. For me this year, it was Kansas City, Buffalo, Philly, who all made it, and Detroit. That's kind of who I thought. But then there's always, in the divisional round, there's always an upset. So that, you know, that's what happened here. Washington beat Detroit. And yeah, you know, they just, I mean, it's cool. Let me first say this. The fact that they made it to the NFC Championship, won 12 games, made it to the NFC Championship after winning four games last year, all with a first year back as a head coach, I guess. Rookie quarterback. I mean, that's pretty insane. So even though you got killed today, if you're a Commanders fan, you got to feel pretty good right now. I certainly would. And if you're an NFC East rival, you're not feeling good. But anyways,
Giants, Cowboys, have fun, guys.
Yeah, mostly those two, not so much Eagles. But anyways, I won't speak for Brandon. But yeah, that being said, I just, you know, I look at it as like, look, you know, they were clearly just outmatched in every sense of the word in this game. You know, every single position on the field, pretty much Philly was, they had the advantage. You know, and the two guys who really showed were, there were two guys where, you know, it's like for Washington where their impact was definitely felt today, as Daron Payne and
who wasn't playing, Daron Payne,
biggest,
yeah,
one, right, and the biggest one, Sam Cosmi,
two guys who didn't play, yeah,
right. But what I mean by that is, like, I think this game showed just how important those guys are. Because you could just see it. It was like, whoa, yeah, this is not right. Yeah, so that's, I mean, when you look at their roster, I think they're probably, I would say both of them are top three players on that roster right now. So, you know, there's that. but yeah, really, really good season overall for Washington. But yeah, at the end of the day, Philly just, yeah, was the way better team in every facet. So, yeah.
Will,
it's going to be an interesting Super Bowl.
It is. Will, what's your reaction on what the Commanders did? Do you feel positive about it because of how good their season was, or did today kind of give you some sort of a wake-up call with them moving forward?
Nah, honestly, it's not really a problem. I think the only biggest problem is that I'm thinking of is during the offseason, because I know Cliff Kingsbury might get a head coaching job. That's going to be a big thing to look about or talk about.
New Orleans, yep. New Orleans.
Orleans.
He's the only one left.
Yep. So he's probably going
to. I don't know if it'll go to him, though.
Yeah.
I have no clue.
It could.
I don't know who's going to take the New Orleans job. And I think that's a mess for another
day.
I don't think they know either.
If it's Mike McCarthy, I would die laughing.
But other than that, like, this is not really something I think that's going to be a big thing for the Commanders to harp about, because, you know, not a lot of people see them making the playoffs in general, nonetheless the NFC Championship. So that's a big up. And also, basically, the game, they had the game close with the Eagles. It's just that they keep on making turnovers after turnovers. And, you know, the defense, of course, they're missing Daron Payne, but the defense obviously showing that, you know, versus a elite running game, that you can't really stop them. And they can't, because we already saw what happened when they was facing Jahmyr Gibbs. This same thing happened when they faced a Barkley. So, honestly, it's something that, you know, that a lot of people even thought the Commanders was not really going to win. And, you know, they lost to the Eagles, so honestly, there's no sour on that one. That was no disappointment on that one. So that was a, you know, an expected loss to most people's eyes. And honestly, it was a good overall season for the Commanders, and showing that. I just hope that after this season, that also, so after, you know, besides with Cliff Kingsbury or whoever, if he leaves or whoever they have an OC, I just hope Jaden Daniels continue to, like, grow. Because we've seen, like, you know, these spectacular rookie season, then the following season they have a sophomore slump. I just hope it doesn't have with Jane Daniels like it did with CJ Stroud. So, and that's one of the biggest things. But overall, a big, a great season and a basically surprising season for the Commanders.
I love how Shane just threw out Doug Peterson's name randomly, like he's even being interviewed for the job. I think, you know, in previewing this, right, obviously we go to Brandon for a lot of what, you know, what happens in this division. You know, I think your first takeaway with this game has to be, like, this is your new rival, right? Like, Eagles Commanders is going to be the thing here for the next 5 to 7 years. But for you, thinking about this kind of old adage that we talk about of these divisional games and what they mean and how they play out, I mean, this must have shocked you in some way.
Did I think we were going to win? Yeah. But I expected better from Washington. I mean, it feels like after that first – the first drive of the game doesn't really tell you a whole lot. Like, you know, the first drive of the game is the first drive of the game. You're feeling the team out. But what confused me early on in this game was the very first drive. You went for it on fourth down twice, on that possession, and you didn't go for it again on fourth and three when you were basically in the red zone. That didn't make sense to me. And then it seems like after that point, we just turned on the Jets and they couldn't catch us. So, I mean, 3-0 was their only lead of the game. So, when we went up 14-3, I mean, the game wasn't over, but in my head, I'm like, this game feels like it feels like they couldn't do anything once we got up 2 scores on them. It was like, yep, that's it. Pack it in. And usually that doesn't happen. Like, this whole season for the Commanders, that doesn't happen. You know, I said it coming out of the into the fourth quarter. I'm like, you know, or like late in that third before we got that big fumble. I was like, if they score here, we're in trouble. I even said that. I was like, oh crap, we're cooked. And the turnovers just ended up killing them. But that's the one thing Philly's been successful at. This isn't a defense you can push around anymore. That's what we've been best at all year is punching that ball free. And you know, early in the season, we weren't getting takeaways, but really since the bye week, we got a ton of them, and a lot of them were the same way, punching that ball out, being physical defensively, and eventually it did take its toll on Washington, but I expected better from Washington. But what the one thing I said, and we didn't do it a ton, like we didn't do it perfectly how I envisioned it, like when I was, so I said one of my keys to the game was containing, not stopping because you can't stop them, but containing Jaden Daniels. Outside of two runs, the touchdown run and then the run kind of late, was it before halftime when they got into field goal range? Outside of those two runs, we put him in hell, really. He was running for his life a lot of the game. And a lot of the throws, we were pushing the line back into his face quite often. And I said that if we did that, it'd be a long day for him. Sure enough, outside of him throwing the ball to Zach Ertz, you know, nobody was open. I don't think De'Ami Brown had a catch today.
He had
Terry
one.
McLaurin had like what?
He had one.
Yeah.
He had one or two. Yeah. McLaurin had one or two. They were non-existent.
Yeah, McLaurin had a big touchdown grab, but I think it was like 3 catches for 50 yards and a TD. But the one TD was a long TD. I'm like, okay, outside of that, he did nothing. Because because Quinion Mitchell put him in a vice grip. And I kept telling people, I said, Terry McLaurin's not going to torch this defense. He's just not. You're not. He hasn't done it in his career. He doesn't beat the Eagles. So I, you know, a lot of things I said were still true going into that game, but I didn't expect us to beat down Washington. Like, you know, I said AJ Brown couldn't hang with Marshawn Lattimore. He couldn't do it today. And his temper got the best of him.
Can I actually add something there? And I'll get this to the floor as well. Marshawn Lattimore's antics are a huge reason why his teams lose in these big games. Do you all as a group agree? Yep. Shane, do you agree? Yeah. Will, do you agree?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. I always thought, even when he was in New Orleans, I think after his rookie season, I think he has some stints of, like, you know, of his old, like, self when he's during his rookie year. But then since then, basically, he's been a shell of his former self. He's been injury prone. And then lately, he's just been beat out in coverage. Wide receiver keep beating him man on man. And, you know, he's not the same player he once was. And honestly, when he was traded to Commanders, I didn't really think they was anything good with him when they had him, because they were even better without him, to be honest. So
we said that. Really
see nothing with him.
Yeah, we all said that. We all collectively were like, this is not a great conversation. Move.
That yeah. conversation, we even, I think Shane was the first person that said it, and we all said it almost at the same time, but Shane was the very first person. He was like, that doesn't move the needle for Washington. Because it did.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, and Shane, so, I mean, and Shane, I mean, that was kind of the moment, I think, for all of us, where we sat there and said, yeah, this game's over. Because when Lattimore kind of just went off, and obviously the two-point conversion, you know, didn't go through, but those antics, I mean, we talked about the Commanders being handsy defensively all year long. I mean, that reared its ugly head again. Lattimore just, you know, his antics getting the better of him. And you know, when you have a player who commands the defense like he does in the way that he does, it affects the entire rest of the roster.
Yeah, especially because, you know, the Commanders, in general, they're a fairly young team. And mm-hmm. I mean, not even just that, but like they're, you know, new ownership, new coach, there's new everything, you know, so they're looking to guys like Lattimore, who is an experienced vet, who, you know, has had a pretty solid career. They're looking at guys like him to be a leader, to be an example. You know, him, Wagner, who, I mean, obviously Bobby Wagner is great at that. He's never had issues like that, but you know, these are the guys that they're looking to. And, yeah, especially when you show up like mid season and that's how you act. It's like, yeah, it's a little embarrassing for you, I think. Yeah, and especially, I mean, I can say this from experience, DBs are, specifically corners, are usually the ones that talk the most trash. So, you know, you really have to kind of watch yourself, because, you know, it's easy for things to get out of hand, but, yeah, it's, yeah. I mean, I already felt like the game was kind of running off the tracks for them, but then when that happened, I was like, yeah, there's, you know, there's tension now. It's, yeah.
Yeah. Brandon, I'll let you finish your thought there.
Yeah, I, you know, looking at this matchup just in general today, I mean, we all expected better, but I did say, you know, Philly from, you know, they played that game a little bit sloppy against the Packers in the wild card round. But when I saw how determined the team was in the snow last week, I said, oh no, this is a team on a mission. Just like the Chiefs are on a mission to three-peat, this is a team on a mission. And today, what I saw from my birds, I that is the most locked in I saw them all season. And they've had good games this year, but that was the most complete game we played all year. And it came obviously at the most perfect time when you had to have it. If you play like that again, that's the kind of effort it's going to take to beat the Chiefs. If you play like that again, I don't think they can hang. If we play the exact same way, I'm not saying to score 55, but I'm saying the same physicality, that same determination, that same pissed off F you attitude we had today. If you do that again, I don't think the Chiefs can hold a candle to Philly in 2 weeks. So I think that it's all going to come down to, well, let me just say this for next year for the Commanders. I want to give them their flowers, because listen, they're a division rival, of course, you know, so that, you know, F you, you know, goodbye, get out my stadium. But at the same time, we have a very tough schedule then next year. And of course, when you have a division, all the teams play the same teams. So we have a gauntlet schedule next year. All the teams we're playing next year are like, it's like a death lineup for our schedule. So I feel like that for the Commanders, that they will have to do some things differently. They will have to kind of get Daniel some help, another receiver, because De'Ami Brown being their number two is pathetic. Just anybody else they have just really can't hang with what Terry McLaurin does, and you can't have Zach Ertz at his age be your second best receiving option. Their line still needs a little bit of help. It's decent, but missing.
And I'll get you going on this too. Like, when you're thinking about all of these different pieces, you as an Eagles fan, you're thinking about not just next year, the next 5 to 7 years with this group, right? Yeah. I mean, it's much bigger. You have a rival now, but I'll let you continue with the line piece. But I think that's an important thing that I think you have the best aspect of talking about is now it's not the Giants, it's not the Cowboys, it's you and the Commanders. But continue with the offensive line piece that you were going at.
I'll hit the whole division really quick right now. The Giants aren't gonna be competitive for another at least five years. So that's out. The Cowboys, new head coach, who's probably one of the worst candidates you could have picked. Out of what you had available, I think. And then just the fact that Dak is older, he's had a couple bad injuries last few years. You don't have a running game, really. I mean, Rico Dowdle's nice, but he's not enough to push you over the finish line. You don't have another receiver outside of CeeDee Lamb. You don't have, that defense is not the same Cowboys defense we're used to seeing, in years past. That's troublesome about that. So that only leaves Washington. And Washington all year was... hey, can they catch Philly for the division? Like when they were red hot, everybody's like, oh, they're gonna win the NFC East. I'm like, no, they're not. No, they're not. Good luck with that. But they showed a lot this year. They've showed, the comebacks, the determination, they felt like zombies all year. Like they were the undead. You couldn't kill them. It was like every time you had them down 2 or 3 scores in the game, they came back. And that's one thing that was in the back of my mind today. Playing this game was that they can still come back, but it felt a little different once we punched that last ball out at the end of the third quarter. That was the dagger. I was like, yep, that'll do it. It's just, and they just didn't feel right at all today watching them. It just felt slow. It felt off. Nothing was in sync. They're still, hey, when you have a quarterback in his rookie season that can do that, can do what Jaden Daniels did, and can show the world that he's for real, because without him, they don't even come close to making the playoffs this year. They don't have him. He's that team is what, at max a 5-win team without him. I think it's being generous.
Yeah, what was the line for them this season? Like 6.5? I think we all said under, in fact. For that,
yeah,
we were wrong. Yeah, I think completely.
Even with him, we said under. Just because rookie quarterbacks struggle, like rookies this year. I mean, Penix didn't play until the last game of the season, pretty much the last 2 weeks. Bo Nix had a good season, but it was a lot of up and down, and then it got killed in the playoffs, which is not really his fault. The team just wasn't good around him, really. So it was like, when you look at that rookie class and you look at like all these different, JJ McCarthy didn't even play. We forget that JJ McCarthy was in this class because he missed the whole season. Out of all the quarterbacks you looked at, it was like, oh yeah, Jaden Daniels literally lit the league on fire this year. And I think in the next, I almost feel like if, and remember, we have the same schedule next year, basically. It's just in a kind of a different order, obviously. next year is going to be a real test of who's going to win the division. That because the division winner next year is going to have to really earn that win. So, I'm liking the future. I said it for what? How many? I think I even said it before the season started. I said I want a competitive NFC East. I really wanted that.
And you only have one team. It was
supposed to be Eagles, Cowboys, and then Giants, Commanders, and let's see what the Commanders have this year. But then it just completely flipped, and now it's Eagles, Commanders. I'm like, what the hell? Where'd that come from? But overall, today summed up to me who the more ready team is in the moment, and that was Philadelphia by a mile. So it's for right now I'm celebrating, but I know for the next 5 to 7, we have a real war on our hands.
Yeah. I'll let you finish up on the offensive line. I mean, yeah, Shane mentioned that they got hurt, but moving forward too, I mean, they're going to have to get younger. I mean, as well as Philly does too, but
yeah. And that was one thing I noticed in this game too, was, I mean, look at our line, our D line and how young they are. And we just pushed Washington off the ball a ton. I mean, they Jalen Carter was just ripping through guys like no one's business. And if it wasn't for him, whenever he drew attention, you know, it was Ojomo getting through, who's like our third or fourth defensive lineman, like I think D tackle, who's made plays all season. By the way, I like Ojomo a lot. When you're fourth, third, fourth string defensive tackle. Actually, no, I think he's fourth because it's actually him. It's Carter Davis because they're together. So Carter Davis, Williams, and then Ojomo. So when your fourth stringer can play like a first, can literally start on at least a third of the teams in the NFL. That's how good Ojomo really is. I've watched him all year. You know, when you're blowing the Commanders off the ball, like Biadasz is not getting, he's not old, but he's not getting any younger. And today he got bullied by our D line. We pushed him back a lot. No Cosme, so we just picked apart that side of the line. You know, Nolan Smith, oh my God, they couldn't stop him coming off the edge, and they couldn't stop Josh Sweat either. So, you know, this was the one thing I was saying 2 years ago, you know, that when the Eagles, if you let them blow you back off the ball, that D-line blow you back off the ball, and you don't adjust, you're done. You're done. Our defense line is one of the best in football. Like, so when it comes to Washington, and we said what would be the death of the Commanders this season would probably end up being their offensive line. And it was today. I think Jaden Daniels got sacked like 2 or 3 times, which isn't a lot, but we got a lot more pressure than that on him. They hit to throw the ball away quite often or just make some crazy throws to try to extend drives. We got in the fourth down often, which it's funny because they thought they were wearing us down. They're really wearing themselves out, having to work so hard. And Tom Brady mentioned this. They had to work for every yard we gave them today. They had to work for everything we gave them. So it's like, yeah, they were making third and fourth down conversions. But the fact that they kept getting into those situations, third and long, third and medium, fourth and medium, fourth and long, it was like, that's going to tire you out as much as it tires the defense out. So, you know, their line not holding up enough, and then their running game being virtually non-existent today. I mean, they had a couple nice runs, but not having any running backs that can really take the pressure off your quarterback is, I mean, we said that all year. We said, hey, they could have a nice duo there with Robinson and Eckler, but, you know, Eckler's nothing to write home about at this point in his career. He did nothing today. And then Brian Robinson, I mean, we just every time he was out there, we just, you know, we crowded that line with Carter and Davis pretty much, and he went nowhere. Like, combined, both running backs had around 50 yards. That was it. They did nothing. So, you know, when you're forcing Jaden Daniels to throw so much coming from behind, and your line is just getting, you know, beat when our line was just blasting through their line pretty much on every play, whether it was forcing a pressure or a hurry, a sack, a fumble, you know, from flying to the ball even, you know, and forcing them to get the ball quicker than they normally would. that's one thing that they have to look at this offseason. Washington can be tough and a pain in our ass for the next 5 to 7 years, but that line needs work because they haven't had a real good offensive line since, what, before RG3 even got drafted there? And we know what happened to RG3. So, you know, they need to fix that line. They got to fix it in a hurry because it's not getting any younger, and it got bullied today.
Let's do an overall Super Bowl preview for each of you once we to finish off our NFL section today. For the head coaches stuff, we'll talk about it next week when we do the NFL awards, because we have an award for best pre-2025 offseason best head coaching hire. So we'll run through the coaches. But Will, what is your overall preview of the Super Bowl?
Yeah, for me, for the preview of the Super Bowl, I think it's going to be a Super Bowl, obviously a Super Bowl rematch. It's something that's going to come down to possibly who's going to make the most explosive plays. And, you know, a lot of people can say the Eagles, but I think the Chiefs has the capability of doing so as well. And I feel like that these two that are some of the, well, one side was actually, you know, basically a cut above the rest. I think some of them, like the, people thought was the Lions, but then it turned out to be the Eagles. And then the other side, the Chiefs, despite, you know, having a down season, they turned out to be one of the best teams in the AFC. And, you know, there's going to be two teams that obviously is going to be mostly a chess match. And it's going to be like if the Chiefs O-line can stand up and if the Eagles can bring more pressure. And also if the secondary can stop some of their guys like Worthy and Juju and many others in D-Hop and Kelsey. Like because they have, that's going to be something to look at, because I think that's going to be the one side of the ball is the Chiefs' offense and the Eagles' defense, and that's going to be something to look at as far as matchup wise. And also going to be the biggest thing is that can this Eagles team, as far as offensively, can they do this as far as in the big dance in the Super Bowl? Can they outdo the Chiefs this time around, because last time it came down to basically a matchup with, I believe it was, yeah, it was Bradbury, and then there was a Chiefs receiver, and it's going to come down to basically, you know, the final play, and I feel like it's going to be the same way this time around, and that's going to be the biggest thing. Can Barkley, can he do what he did versus the Commanders versus the Chiefs, and can the Eagles, or can the Chiefs rather, with Mahomes, can they replicate what they did versus the Eagles last time and do it this time, and you know, wash away what people thought about them during the season despite their success this season. So it's going to be a lot of, you know, a lot of pros and cons to both this season, but they both wound up coming to the Super Bowl, and now we're going to see really who's going to like silence some of their doubters with Hurts. Is mostly can he take this team to win the big one this time around while performing well, and can basically the Chiefs, like I said before, can they try to basically wash away all the, you know, criticism they had during this season and despite their, you know, success. So that's going to be some of the things to look at for the Super Bowl.
Shane, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is obviously a rematch of that game, but, you know, these are two very different teams this time around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you still got a lot of the same guys at the core, but, you know, Kelce is not what he was 2 years ago. Neither is Chris Jones. No L'Jarius Sneed. You know, it's the offensive line is not as good this time for both of them. I mean, not that either offensive line is particularly bad, but it's, you know, I mean, they're not like they were that year. And, you know, perhaps there's also the matter of Philly has two different coordinators. But I think the biggest difference is now Philly has this man named Saquon Barkley who is, you know, I mean, he's just been a wrecking ball in the middle of an avalanche going downhill this season. I mean, no one's been able to stop him. Thank you, Brandon. Thank you. and so, you know, I look at it and it's like, I think, you know, Philly, they have that component now in the run game, and they also have the better defense this time. So I think, you know, and I mean, if you just, you know, you look at Kansas City's games throughout the year, they barely beat most teams. And honestly, I think Philly wins it like 34-21. I mean,
I love that. I would love it.
I don't know about that, but
I mean, of course, there. Brandon loves it. That's awesome.
Of course, I mean, it might not be, maybe not that big of a score difference, but I mean, it's just when I compare these two teams, I just Philly. In my mind, except for the coaching, has every advantage. You know, they have the better D line, the better secondary, the better linebackers, I think. You know, defense in general. They have the better running back, better receivers. The only debatable area is the quarterback, which, you know, Mahomes and Hurts both kind of had down years, so it's hard to judge there. Which for them, a down year is still pretty good, but you know what I mean. and then, you know, obviously Andy Reid is a much better head coach and offensive mind than Sirianni and Kellen Moore combined. And Spags is, you know, better than Fangio, of course. So that's, you know, that's really what the difference is just, you know, those few guys. Otherwise, though, I mean, I really like Philly's personnel much more. And I just, you know, I think really, I mean, you know, Hurts, he's one of the best quarterbacks against the blitz, which is something that Brandon's talked about before. And, you know, I think if there's any team that's going to be able to beat that Steve Spagnuolo blitz, it's going to be them. And, you know, if that does work, well, we got Saquon. Good luck. I mean, you know, no one's been able to stop him. So, you know, if you can start now, then good for you. But, yeah, so I think they win by, you know, 10, 12, 13 points probably, which, I mean, that might be crazy, but, yeah, that's just what I see happening.
Will, do you have a score prediction for this game, actually?
Will's going to have us blown out by 3 scores.
Nah, actually, it's going to be close. I say 34-31 Chiefs.
Ooh, okay.
I'm going to go crazy. I'm going to go 17-10 Kansas City. I don't think there's any scoring at all. I think the defenses just smack each other around for 3 hours.
I could see that. That wouldn't shock me.
Yeah.
Yeah. First team to 20 wins. Yeah.
Brandon,
wouldn't surprise me at all.
Brandon, I know you talked about these different aspects of this team, but the youngness of particularly the secondary, I think, is something that you haven't really touched tonight. I think that's an interesting thought process as well for Philly going up against Kansas City in both a positive and a negative way, but you can take that as you may.
I think it's the there's a bunch of different ways to dissect the youngness of our defense. In most cases, when you look at a young defense, there's always a young guy or two that comes into any defense in the NFL, and there's a learning curve. And the problem is with Philly's young guys, there's no learning curve. They're ready to go day one. Jalen Carter, when he got here, you know, last year, was ready to go. Quinion Mitchell, when he got here this year, ready to go. Cooper DeJean, they said if it wasn't for his injury, he would have played like week one over Avante Maddox. These guys were ready to go. And the thing is, none of them, not a single one of them, had bad games all season long. Not one. And so that it helps in that regard. It doesn't help because you need the experience, obviously. You know, you have to have been there before. And the thing is, these guys obviously weren't here before. This is the first time, you know, those jitters are a real thing. But it's, you know, these guys didn't play in the playoffs. You know, this was their rookie season. So these guys didn't play playoff games. They have 3 playoff games under their belt now. So this is just one more. I mean, yeah, it's the biggest one, but this is now one more. So they've already got 3 playoff games under their belt, which they've all had great days. Coop's been playing well, returning and making some plays. Quinion Mitchell absolutely shut down Terry McLaurin today. And he's really played great the whole season. He's and I'm going to say it right now, he's my defensive rookie of the year, period. And Jalen Carter, there's not a line in this league that has blocked him for a whole game. There is not one. And if they have, it's because they've held the shit out of him and it hasn't been called. So that's what I like about a lot of the young guys. I mean, Isaiah Rodgers, we forget, is still young too. He's only about 26 years old. He's still young. You know, he's been up and down this year, but he won't play too much, but he'll probably find a play to factor in this game. Like, I love that and people forget, you know, CJ Gardner-Johnson is not old. He's only like 26 himself. So, you know, but CJ has the advantage of playing on this same Eagles team 2 years ago that lost to the Chiefs. You don't think he doesn't want this as bad this time around? He's been on a mission himself this year. He's played really well this year, just like he did 2 years ago. So, you know, it can go one of two ways. And I also forgot to mention this. The Chiefs have more speed than they did last time. Here's the problem with that, though. The Eagles now have more speed than they did last time, too. So, you know, Quinion Mitchell has some of the best recovery speed, if not the best, for a corner. I mean, outside maybe PS2, has top 3 recovery speed for a corner in the NFL right now. Quinion Mitchell only got burnt once on a TD this year, and it was a double move, but it's like, he's a rookie. Other than that, he allowed nobody to burn him. Not Ja'Marr Chase, not Mike Evans, not CeeDee Lamb. So, you know, is D-Hop going to burn him? Hell no. Is Worthy going to burn them? Hell no. So, you know, they can. The thing is, the Chiefs have to get creative, I feel like, just like they did tonight, and get those guys out in space quickly for that speed to work against us. Because if you put that speed out there on passing routes, you ain't going nowhere. You're not. Not against Philly's defense, you're not. So it's, you know, not to mention too, like Reed Blankenship, another younger guy. I mean, he's been here for a while, but he's still, I think, like 26, 27. And he makes plays. He flies to the ball and hits harder than a truck. So you know, the thing is, Philly's defense is more physical this time around. They are faster. And, you know, younger, like I said, can go both ways. The younger part plays into the faster part. But the thing is, they're also, for their age, this is probably, and I'm trying not to be biased, but I have to be here because this is what I just feel. I've never seen especially a defense, not just a team, because the offense is relatively unchanged outside of Saquon Barkley. But I've never seen a defense. I've never seen a defense this young play this well over the course of an entire season. Entire season. I've never seen it. I've never seen this many guys. I didn't even mention how Nolan Smith is like 23. And the guy's been our best damn defensive lineman in the playoffs. He has like 4 sacks in 3 games in the playoffs. And he had a couple big pressures, and he had a big sack today of Jaden Daniels, who was super fast. So, you know, to me, I haven't even mentioned all the young guys, but this is also what Vic Fangio wanted. Vic Fangio's defense is predicated off of guys that fly to the ball, that hit, that force takeaways, but also are young enough because they have to have speed. You have to have speed on the Vic Fangio defense. And this is the best defense he's coached in his career. So he got exactly what he wanted. He had they said on draft night, he had a big hand in taking Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean. And it's worked out beautifully. So the only way I can see us losing is if those Chiefs guys, and they will, because they'll figure out a way, they're creative. They have to get those guys in space. But also another thing too, they can't just run screens all day, like, you know, or just quick passes, because one thing Philly's been great at this year is blowing those up as well. So we take away a lot of things. You know, this isn't gonna be the same Chiefs team is just gonna march down the field nonstop. I don't think this is gonna be a shootout. I don't think it's gonna be super low scoring. So it's like, I'm not gonna say 17-10. I'm not gonna say 35-31, even though that would be a crazy score, because that was basically the same score we got last time. I think this is going to be somewhere in the middle. Like, this feels to me like this is going to be like 26-23 Eagles. That's what this feels like to me. And it feels like whichever defense just gets that one stop, I feel like late in the fourth quarter, is going to get the job done. Yeah, obviously we didn't do it last time, but this defense is built differently than that. And like I said, you know, this time it's different. We're not playing in a damn water park this time. You know,
we're not playing in a water park. I want that quoted. That's so good.
We're not playing in a water park this time, and we're not. Our defense line's a lot faster and a lot younger, so it's going to be challenging for an older Chiefs line now, you know, 2 years older, to have to defend that. And listen, Mahomes can do it. But Jalen Carter has wrecked a lot of games. Nolan Smith has wrecked a lot of games. You know, I think they'll have a heavy hand in this game. I can see the Chiefs winning because it's the Chiefs devil magic. You know, they could beat us again, and I'll be like, I won't talk to anybody for the next 2 years because I can't handle losing twice to the Chiefs in 3 years.
Oh, that's gonna be amazing.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. But listen, but the one thing I look at it too is, you know, a lot of teams are hate watching both of these teams in the next 2 weeks. But it's a great feeling because, hey, you hate us because you ain't us. You want to be here so bad. We've done it already. So, you know, I want to see the best version of this Eagles defense. I want to see what they did again today, what they've done the last 3 weeks. I need to see this again one more time, because I feel like if you make it 4-for-4 on great defensive efforts, I think you get your revenge. And I think, you know, I finally can see my quarterback raise the Lombardi, my starting quarterback, because last time it was Nick Foles, it was our backup. So, you know, I mean
the GOAT himself.
Nick Foles,
best quarterback he had.
By the way, I love that he was I love that he was there presenting the NFC Championship trophy today.
Yeah.
Dude, am I crazy for just saying I will never watch the presentation for the NFC or AFC Championship trophy? To me it has that empty cup feel. Because if you make the Super Bowl, that's what you want to win. You don't want that damn trophy.
You know what's funny? It sucks being the runner up to the Chiefs, but I forgot about this. But this is so true. This is the third Eagles Super Bowl appearance in 8 years. And
does it feel like it though?
And the rest of the time it's been the Kansas City Chiefs winning it. So if you think about it, the Eagles, I mean, it sucks to say this because no one wants to be the bridesmaid, but the Eagles are the second best team in the NFL. That's a fact. They just are. So it's
like over the last 4 or 5 years or whatever.
Yeah, more than that, it's been three Super Bowls in 8 years.
Really? Yeah, but they had a couple pretty bad years in there.
That don't really 8 years. No one
talks about COVID though. COVID was a lost year for everybody.
But the last three or four definitely, yes.
Yeah, but I'm going back to our Super Bowl win. Since that Super Bowl win, because 16 Carson Wentz's first year was rough. 15 and 14. Oh God, Sam Bradford, Mark Sanchez. The list goes on. So that's what I'm saying. Since that 17 season, so for the last 8 years, if you think about it in terms of winning percentage as a team, you think in terms of, you know, who's always been there with the Chiefs pretty much at the end for most of these things. If it hasn't been Tom Brady fighting the Chiefs, like, you know, with the Bucks, it's been the Eagles.
I will say, for a majority of that time, you were calling for coaches to be fired.
Yeah, but here's the thing: I will still stand by it. If Nick Sirianni can get us that ring, I'll change my tune, because this year he's actually stayed out of his own way and he handpicked those coordinators to coach this team. So if we do get the job done, I will finally say, hey, you know what? You did it. Great job. But if he can't do it, I will forever be pissed until he does it, because he got outcoached in that last Super Bowl. But the thing is, you are 2 years wiser. He's been this year, he stayed out of his own way, and he's had his moments, but he stayed out of his own way for 99% of it. He's let his coordinators do most of the work. And he stepped in when necessary to decide on big moments in the game, which have usually gone well for us late in games.
You forgot the biggest part. He now has a bald head. You guys haven't lost since he has a bald head.
Well, no, yeah, and he hasn't shaved it since. I don't want him to shave it again before this, because that's bad luck. So it's like basically since he shaved it, just keep rolling with the playoff facial hair, the playoff mood. He's got the hair everywhere. I'm like, you know what? Keep going. I want you to look like freaking Forrest Gump when he just kept running and he's got all that facial hair and stuff. I'm like, that's what takes the win. That's fine by me. But, you know, I believe that if he can get it done, then I mean, hey, if he can get it done, when you look at the winning percentage and you look at the fact, yeah, he might be an ass, but at least they're getting it done. He will be the greatest coach in Eagles history. It's just that, can he get it done? We'll see. But until then, I still don't like the guy. I still can't defend him. But if he gets it done, I can't hate him anymore. So get it done, coach. Get it done.
I still think Andy Reid is it's funny because Andy Reid's probably the greatest coaches of these two franchises, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, he definitely is, and I can't take that away from him. But I just feel, but the thing is, he didn't win it. He didn't win it here. So to me, he should have won it. He didn't have the talent to win it, which sucks, because I feel like he would have won three or four of them in Philly had he had the talent that he has in Kansas City. He just never had that because McNabb's too busy getting hung over at parties the night before Super Bowl. So, which is why I can't stand Donovan McNabb, and I don't care what Eagles fan wants to fight me on that. I'll tell you why he was a trash quarterback. I wish he had the talent, because he had T.O. and T.O. played. If T.O. doesn't play that game on a broken leg, I think the Eagles win that Super Bowl against the Patriots.
You know what's funny? I want to rewatch the Super Bowl for the show because I think it's such a fascinating Super Bowl because Mike Vrabel was so good in that game. And to think about where he is as a coach, it's nuts. It's crazy. But to finish us off, Brandon, I'm actually going to get you started on this because we watched Free Solo, which was Adam's pick. And you know a lot about how Adam's kind of a big fan of rock climbing. It's definitely a fascinating choice for a lot of reasons, but you can get us started on kind of why you feel Adam picked this one, because it's definitely one that I know we've been talking about wanting to do for a long time. It's a really fascinating film.
Yeah. You know, I've seen it before. So, you know, I've seen it actually two or three times before because we had to watch it in one of my film classes for college, and also Adam made me watch it too because Adam loves Alex Hanold. With this movie, I mean, part of me is like, you know, I don't like documentaries. I don't kind of like how those are told, but this is one where it's like, hey, you're going on kind of it's not found footage, but it feels like that. That's almost how it is too. It has a little bit of found footage-ish, you know, nature to it, even though it's a documentary. But for as death-defying as what Alex does in this movie and the challenges that come with it, you know, part of me kind of hates movies like this because you have an element of like where, okay, well, if something happened to him, because free soloing is obviously there's nothing to save you. Like, if he would have died making this movie, God forbid, it wouldn't have come out. So you know how pretty much the movie was going to go. Whether he made his summit or not, or just decided to go back down and that's it. So if you go into the movie with that kind of mindset, knowing that, hey, well, nothing bad's really going to happen to him, then you're kind of like, well, it, you know, whatever. But then when you think about the journey and just, for lack of a better term, the balls it takes to do something that like he did, you've got to be, it's not even just fearless of that. You've got to be beyond fearless. You're literally laughing at death in the face. And for him to do what he does, because it's not the first thing, it's not the first time he's done it. He said he's done it before. And obviously since this movie, he's done more. But when you are that fearless, you know, it makes for great subject matter for a documentary, because documentaries, you know, like, yeah, there's war documentaries, there's crime documentaries, there's things, there's, you know, documentaries on everything. But this is a documentary, this is a kind of a type that you'll never see again. At least I don't think so. You know, there's people that climb Everest and things like that. Yeah, okay. But you're doing it, you know, you're doing it with a lot of safety, you're doing it with a lot of caution. This guy's literally just climbing a damn mountain pretty much. With nothing but just his body. That's it.
And
it's a straight up and down cliff.
It's just chalk and him. That's it.
Yep. This is rock climbing. This isn't even rock climbing on steroids. This is rock climbing on steroids on top of steroids. This is stupid. Like, no human should be. And the thing is, the fact that he's done this before and after, like, this wasn't the only one he did. It's just the one they happened to film. The fact that he's done it before is ridiculous. And the fact that he goes into it saying, like, I look at this almost like, because rock climbing is a sport. It is. It's a very intense sport. It's very physical. But watching the, and then also trying to do rock climbing myself just in an indoor gym scared the crap out of me. So just imagine.
Oh, I love it.
So yeah. But see, when you're a heftier kind of guy and you don't want to fall. Because the bigger you are, the harder you fall. So that I try not to put, and also it's just expensive. But that's neither here nor there.
it's expensive. Done. That's my review of the movie. It's expensive.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to risk injury for like a $1,000 a year to go rock climbing. So that's not happening. But yeah, when you consider that there are people out there that do this for a living and that do it with, like, it's not even having no fear. It's like having more than that. Like, it almost feels like it's like, what possesses someone to be like, hey,
it's hard. What you were describing is that it's hard to describe. It makes no sense.
Yeah. Because human beings should not do this. This is like when you watch episodes of Jackass, dude, it's like, do you like when they say don't try this at home? Oh, really? Don't try this ever. Because this literally will kill you.
Immediately. Like, not just that it will kill you, it will kill you immediately. Like he describes specifically being like, if I fall, my body will die on impact.
Yes. He even said one wrong step and it could end him. Like, can you imagine going into that? Like, especially because at a certain point, you can't just climb back down easily. Like,
there's no climbing back down. You can't.
No. Like, no. And then imagine how, and the thing is, for a regular person, but imagine him. I mean, he has a lot of training, but still, he's still a person. Can you imagine, like, and he said this before, how exhausting that is to be on that rock, on that mountain, pretty much, on that slab for that long, trying to hang on, and, hey, realizing, hey, I don't have a safety net. I'll actually die here if I don't go. So, like, and the thing is, he says it in the movie, they ask him a bunch of times, like, oh, are you afraid of doing this? Or do you know you could die doing this? He's like, yeah, I know. He's like, I would be wrong to say I wasn't nervous. But he's like, I'm keeping it together as best I can. And the thing is, he never kind of let it show, really, that he was truly nervous, which is crazy to me. Because it's not like playing a football game, like we talk about on this show. He's literally trying to defy death when death is looking at him right in the face. So... Yeah. It's watching this movie the first time, it was the first doc, and then listen, I told you guys I don't like docs. It was the first documentary I ever watched where I was like, oh my God, I can't stop watching this. Because I'm like, this is stupid. Like, this isn't a war documentary where you're shooting a gun at somebody. Like, listen, I'm not downplaying that, but like, those things happen throughout history, you know, whatever. Like the thing is, you can survive a war. You can survive, you know, playing a football game. I mean, there's some element of death involved, but it's very, you know, well, not in war, but like it's lower than this. This, like we said, one wrong move, you are dead. Like, it's crazy. This is literally, like, I went, and the crazy thing is, like I said, you know he's not going to die because they wouldn't show this documentary otherwise, which kind of takes a little bit of the oh my God factor out of it, but not really. When you realize how hard it is to do something like this, and when you realize, just like, you know, I think didn't they ask his girlfriend like how she felt about this, but she actually was like behind him on this. I'm like, that's W woman. W. Dude,
no, and she's emotional and she's trying not to show it in a way. Different than everyone else.
Yeah. But just to see how strong she tries to keep it together and still kind of support him and be behind him, that's a great woman right there. But they say, hey, behind every great man is a great woman. And I don't know if he's still with her now.
They have two kids.
Yeah, they got married.
They got married and have two kids. They just had a kid recently, this past year, I think in June or July or something.
Yeah, so I mean, and just the fact that, you know, like, you can't imagine when loved ones tell their significant others or relatives, whatever it is, you know, hey, I love you. Yeah, like, I know you're going off to war. I know you're going off to pursue your dreams. It's like, but it's like, this dream is insanity. Yeah, I'm going to go climb a big ass freaking rock with like a 99% chance of death. Like,
I can't stop laughing because I think it's the only way to cope with some of it. Right? Like, you know what we were talking about, like, laughing is a cope. Like, this is crazy.
Because it's insanity. It doesn't make sense. Like, your feet are not firmly planted on the ground. You are not totally, because you gotta also account for the weather, especially the higher up you go. You're not fully in control of your destiny here. Like, you know, you can't just make a mistake and say, hey, I'm going to stay alive, you know, after making a slight mistake. Like, you know, in a war, you can get shot with a bullet in the shoulder and still survive. Like, this is okay. If I step wrong, I'm going to fall to my death. So, like, this is literally, like, this is, like, imagine how they say, like, in war documentaries, like, hey, you know, there was landmines all around the war field. You step one wrong direction, you're done. That's exactly what this is.
But I would argue it's worse because it actually is one wrong move.
Yeah, like it's just crazy how much this documentary, and the thing is, it goes by pretty quickly for a documentary too, which I like.
It's an hour and 30 minutes. It's really short.
Yeah, it's very fast, and I like that because it's like you're not drawing it out too much. Just hey, this is a guy who does this for a living. This is a guy who does this to challenge himself. Also, you know, here's him. Here's some of his story. Here's what he's trying to do. Here's him actually doing it. And then here's the aftermath done. That's all you need. That's what they did. So like I said, I don't like documentaries, but this is the one I will watch over and over and over because I still, on like a third watch, can't understand what I'm watching. It doesn't make sense.
I'll go really quick because there's things that sit with me, a lot, and like it's the progression of this as a film that is wild because you're kind of immediately hit in the face with what's actually going on, very very quickly, mm-hmm. But also there's a lot of like morality pieces that are fascinating. Like how he views death is,
oh yeah,
just it's, I kind of get it just from stuff that I've gone in my life, like I get it, but like damn, like that is, you know, like I don't think people understand how bleak it is to think, you know, everyone dies someday, if tomorrow's the day I die, whatever, people move on, like that is a really tough, yeah, headspace. Like I get that headspace, I totally see it, but that is bleak. And to be very, and to be frank, like that's the kind of thing that, you know, his eventual wife is like grappling with, is, oh, that, yeah, thought process. And you see her grapple with it in this very immense way, and also at the same time trying to get him to build like an emotional, open up an emotional wall that as a rock climber you're told kind of not to open up in a way. And then they're like, they're getting a house and she really wants to have a family, which, you know, unbelievably they eventually did, and you know that's awesome. But it's just like there's all these like life things that are happening as well in the course of this, and then on top of it, it's like the moment that I flipped was when he couldn't do it the first time. He's like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And I respected that decision. But mentally, you know, in his head, he's just like, fuck. Because you're just like, I really want to accomplish this. Like, I'm the first person to ever do this. I etched my name in history in a much different way, and I just couldn't do it. And then, you know, and then Shane, that kind of leads me to my question for you. As a filmmaker, this is so different, right? This idea, I mean, look, National Geographic's, they have this way of filming nature that is incredible, and that's the first thing that kind of sits with you. But the biggest thing that sits with you is the mental aspects and the conversations that the cameraman, that the director is having with Alex of, how do we shoot this? How do we do this? What do we do if he dies? Like, these are things that an average director just doesn't think about at all. It's not a part of your day life at all. I mean, it's incredible.
Right. And, you know, I really liked that they paid, you know, particular attention to the logistics of shooting this because, yeah, I mean, how do you shoot a guy climbing up a 3,000-foot rock wall?
Without bothering him, without screwing with him at all.
Exactly. I mean, not only that, but just protecting yourself too. I mean, that's like, that's not easy. Obviously, duh. But yeah, it's just, and I like that they addressed that, and it wasn't like a, you know, a fly in the wall type of documentary where, you know, the film crew just acts like they're not there. Because, and sometimes I like that, you know, the documentary we did last year,
Octopus Teacher, which I felt a lot of similarities, sort of, in a way, just how it's filmed.
I don't like that one. I like this one. Like,
To me, this feels like a completely different documentary than that one, because that one very much was, you know, the camera was passive. It was
okay. Yeah, no, I see.
It was
very
much like, you know, they didn't want you to think about the camera being there and that it was filmed, but this, there was like real attention to it. And both work because, you know, they're very different subject matters. One is, you know, this guy doing this insane death defying stunt or whatever. And then the other is sort of a, like a love story between a guy and these other species that he finds in the ocean. You know, so.
But I'll add this, though. I think it is similar in the way of just filming nature is such a unique process, which I'm sure you'll get into as well. Like, it is so different than, like, your average way of approaching film. But continue there, I think, with that. Because I feel like that's a good jumping off point, too.
I think it's a lot easier, though. Personally. Because you're much less limited when you're shooting people. When you're shooting people, that sounded wrong. When you're
we get it, we know.
When you're filming people, you know, you're sort of limited to, not limited, but you have to keep it in the confines of, you know, a 5-6 foot tall body. More or less. But nature, I mean, you can just look around and there are hundreds of different framing options you can see, and, you know, 360 degrees of angles and directions you can go. So, you know, it's, to me at least, but I, you know, I just think what I like most about this documentary is the fact that they don't just show him doing the climb the final time when he actually does it. That would be a YouTube video. You know, like, here I am going on this death-defying stunt, and then, you know, he does it. Like, that's, or like a TV, you know, like a hour-long
ABC special. Like, that's what it is.
Right.
An hour-long ABC special. That's what it normally is. That's what it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, like Nick Willenda on the balancing.
Yeah.
But anyways. But, you know, making it a feature-length documentary, you get to see the build-up to it. Because it's not, I mean, you know, deciding to do this is not just, hey, I'm going to take the dog for a walk. Like, this is a, I mean, this is, like, serious. Like Brandon said, chances are he's going to die. And, you know, so I like that they show the buildup to that and how it affects not only him, but his girlfriend. And, you know, it's, I think that's what makes this unique, because it just raises the stakes that much more. And, you know, you see the trials and, I was about to say in the hills he has to climb, but no pun intended.
both literally and physically and emotionally too, in all these three ways.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, So that's. I thought that was really unique. And, you know, he did get pretty vulnerable in some ways. I mean, you know, when he was talking about how he blamed his girlfriend for the one fall, and he's like, yeah, I thought about breaking up with her. And it's like, whoa, you know, like, that's how much this means to him. And, you know, you might be kind of thinking like, oh, dude, you know, chill out. It was an accident. But when you're in that kind of heightened state, it's like, you know, I can see why somebody would go there, you know. It's just, yeah. So, anyways.
I mean, I guess my overall thing that I kind of want to, I guess the right word would be push you towards is like, when it comes to filming this, like, put yourself in the shoes of the director. I mean, can you? Like, can you even get into that headspace?
Well, the amount of times that the crew had to look away because they just couldn't do it. You know, that tells you everything you need to know. And I do want to say, because, Brandon, you were saying the documentary was made, so obviously he lived. However, I have seen several documentaries sort of like this. I mean, not about climbing, but just, you know, about something dangerous where they actually die, but they just don't show that part of it. And they just say they died in their attempt. So I did not think he was safe because I did not know the real life story if he had, you know, lived or whatever. So I was watching this and I was like, okay. but obviously he did. So, yeah.
I think the last part for me was just the meticulous planning in the ways of, like, sometimes you do something, and this is kind of rare. It's not really rare. I mean, it happens in day-to-day life, but obviously not to this extent. It's like, you can meticulously plan everything, and boom. You know, it doesn't matter, almost.
That's the thing about a documentary. It's live. It's going. You can't plan for it. I mean, you can a little bit, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's the planning of, like, think about the different aspects of what he had to do, right? They're very meticulous of, like, this is what this part is called. These are this challenges. And he's really describing those things. And just, I mean, he's planning for all of this with a rope, without a rope for certain sections. And you just never... But the thing is, ultimately, he does it, and he's just like, I don't know. And, you know, and that just sits with you too. And Will, I don't know if you were able to see this. I don't know if you've seen
this is
passing either, but continue, Brandon, before we get to Will here.
You know what?
I have.
No, I was gonna say, you know what's great about, you know, something like this, and it's like, well, we can kind of liken it to other sports. It's like, and you know, it's no different here. You can plan and be smart, and I've done this before, but even he said, he's like, this is the biggest challenge I've ever taken on, you know, undertaken. And he's like, this is some, you know, like the other ones, you know, that there was some risk of death, but I knew what I was doing. And he's like, I mapped it all out and I knew exactly how to approach it. And he's like, this one, he just can't. It was just something, it was an entirely different beast. And it's like, you know, you can plan for things on paper, not just in sports, but anything in life, but you still have to go out there and execute, you know, like that's, and, but it's a scary feeling when, and this is why I say it's different than sports, obviously, or different than other sports, because rock climbing is still a sport, but it's different than other sports. This is, you know, it's not just, hey, you know, we didn't win the game, I didn't execute, whatever. It's like, no, there's no press conference after this. If he falls, he's dead. Like,
right.
This is There's literally, there's no coming back from this. It's not, I didn't execute. This is like, nope. It's a completely different story if he doesn't do it. So it's, when you think about just the grand scale of that and how just, I mean, you can imagine how scary like that is for us just watching it, but for what must be going through his mind and his loved ones' minds and things like that. Like that's what makes this documentary so different. It's just there's firsthand accounts of just quote unquote just complete like fear and uncertainty, and that like you know some documentaries like you know that have like that if I was going to make out alive or not, and it's like okay, but you're not talking about something that you have full control over, or you're talking about something that you have more control over than what he does. So it's there's truer terror when it comes to something like this, and it's incredible that you can actually basically film every step of the way with this, and him not being distracted too much, even though I think he admitted at one point he was a little bit distracted. I mean, who wouldn't be? There's a camera still there. I mean, you might not notice it all the time. It's there.
Wasn't it hilarious? Well, as he's climbing, every positive progress, he's like, yeah. He looks at the camera. He's like, yes. I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah, I'm like, bro, focus on the damn on the slab. Like, do you like? I can't imagine taking my focus off of it for a second, because I'm like, I climb a thing at the rock gym that's like 10 feet tall, and I'm like, oh my god, how do I get down? I forget for a second, and then I'm like, I fall, I can like twist my ankle and like be off my feet for like a month. It's like no, it's like he's literally like, yeah, I did it. Oh, wait a minute, there's death below me, like. What? Excuse me?
The pure air and pure death. Oh my god. God. Will, so you have seen this before, right, Will?
I haven't yet.
Okay. So I do want to ask though, like, what are your thoughts on just documentary filmmaking as a whole? Like, what's your experience with it?
Yeah, I think documentary films, I think it's usually one of those films that you have to at least determine whatever the documentary is about, either a person or an event that takes place. At least make it accurate as you can make it, because if you're making it based off of, like, I remember I watched this movie that was taking place during the Rodney King Rodney King riot, and they have like these people on like TV and stuff of what happened to take place, and then but they have this separate sort of movie of something that take place, like a heist or whatever. I forgot what the movie was called. It happened sometime last year. Yeah, it was.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I forgot
what it was called. I remember watching in the movies, but yeah, because you got to have at least make it several aspects to make it similar to what it is if you're making a documentary. And those type of movies are very tricky as well, because we've seen documentaries in the past that people that are alive during that point openly criticize, because either they were there or they was there and they was there like at the on TV, or they was like watching it on TV that was taking place. And like we seen it especially with the Lake Show. I remember when the late Jerry West, he criticized that sort of documentary of the Laker show. So I think documentaries are good and good callbacks, but you have to really have those like exact moments. That's why they always like work close with the people that were involved or the person or the event that taking place, so they can take every aspect of aesthetic for each part of that movie and make it as accurate and realistic as possible. So usually documentaries are good, but sometimes you gotta look about those things when you're producing those type of movies.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we're kind of getting towards too. It's just like the meticulous nature, right, of a documentary and the meticulous nature of this in particular, that sets it apart. And I think if, as we're thinking about documentary films, that's just such a gigantic piece of that puzzle. Because to get that right is the difference between it being an all-time classic like this is, or something a little less than that. It is funny that we're doing this on the week that the Oscars announced their awards, because to me, Shane, you and I've talked about Oscars as a whole, and this just to kind of wrap it up and give our ratings. This to me genuinely feels like one of the few like true Oscar movies of the last maybe 5 to 10 years that really felt special and meaningful in a much different way than the Oscars normally approaches their nomination list.
Yeah, I mean, since 20, well, I think like 2019 was the last year we truly got a batch of kind of special movies. Yeah, I think since then, well, this came out a little bit before then, obviously, but yeah, oh, 1992, yeah. that was the documentary Will was referring to. But yeah, I mean, like, I thought Coda was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Of like the Oscar movies since then. I don't know if there's any others
Yeah.
that I
No,
was like really
there's
blown
not
away by.
much. There's not much. And I think even in what I've seen of the current crop of this current nominations list, I'm like, I don't feel great about it. Brandon, do you have any thoughts on kind of how this movie is like a better representation of what the Oscars kind of should be, but isn't anymore?
I just, I feel like when it comes to the Oscars in general, I mean, well, we know how pretentious it is now. But when I look at like Oscar-worthy movies, I'm like, it's got to be a movie that no matter who you are, can just resonate with you, whether it's on a personal level, or just like a spiritual level, or just dealing with some with your own like mortality, or something. It's got to be something that really hits home, and it's like a document for a documentary to hit home. And you think about the death-defying feat that just probably will not be done again, and it's. I look at so many Oscar movies that get nominated. And I'm like, well, this movie's not good. This movie doesn't resonate to anybody except for a certain demographic. This movie doesn't make sense as to why it's in a list with others, or why this group of movies is even, nominated for whatever it's nominated for. And it's like, we need to see more movies that just make an impact, not for like a specific group of people, but just make an impact that you can look at it and it can affect everyone in a room.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't feel like there's enough of that in Hollywood today, where it's like, and this isn't even in Hollywood, it's just a regular documentary. It's like, this isn't like the production values aren't crazy, obviously. But it doesn't need to be. You don't need to have crazy production values to tell a unique and interesting story, whether it's a documentary or something else. You don't need that.
Yeah.
And I feel like Hollywood, and especially the Oscars, doesn't realize that, because it's like it feels like every movie they nominate has insane production values and or like over the top, like too much, kind of just polished, buttoned up. But like, a lot, especially they have a lot of niche movies that I've never even heard of that get nominated. I'm like, who's the five people that nominated this movie that watched it? Because none of
And
us did.
by the way, that's the thing too with the Oscars I think particularly with last year's nomination list and this year's, I think, like, I only know about these movies because I just know about them from, like, happenstance. Like, I'm just like, oh, yeah, I remember this movie from this article that I read, or this thing from this thing that I read. Like, the casual moviegoer will not see a majority of the movies from this nominations list this year. Like, it just won't happen. It doesn't appeal, as you said, to, like, a wider audience. It simply doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, because it used to be like the movies that were nominated were just the best movies, period. But it feels like in the last, you know, 5-6 years, it's really been like the movies that make the biggest statement. It's not even the movie that like is the best quality. I watch the 10 movies that get nominated for Best Picture every year just because I'm curious as to what they think we like.
Yeah. Because it is a statement of the 10, it is a statement year? Really quick. It is a statement of what we like and what the audience should watch. That's the point of the Oscars, but continue.
Right. And it used to be that way. I mean, you know, you look at the nominees and 2019, they were fantastic. But you know, since then, of the 10, most years I like 2 or 3. That's it. The other 8 or 9, I'm like, or no, 7 or 8. I can't do math. I'm just like, eh. I mean, I don't know. It's fine, but I'm not like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at 2019, Parasite was the winner, which ironically, that was the one I didn't really care for. But, you know, you had Ford versus Ferrari. Fantastic. Irishman, snooze fest. But Jojo Rabbit, great. Joker, not my personal thing, but I get it. I see it, you know. Little Women, fantastic. Marriage Story, great. 1917, banger. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, excellent. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's just good. They're solid movies. But then you have, like, you know, 2022, I think? It was, like, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Confusing, but whatever. All Quiet on the Western Front. Yeah, pretty good. Avatar. Banshees of Inisherin. One of the worst movies I've ever seen. Elvis. Music biopic. I don't care. The Fablemans. Another boring biopic. I don't care.
Fablemans, you know, Tar, was awful. I saw Fablemans and Tar, and I didn't like either one. Genuinely,
Tar,
either one.
Awful. Triangle of Sadness. Also stupid. Top Gun Maverick. Solid. So that's it. Two movies in that one for me.
I'm just gonna really quickly pull up the nominations list for this year and just very quickly pull this up. A Complete Unknown, fantastic. I know you guys don't like biopics, fantastic. Dune Part Two, fantastic. The Brutalist, I was gonna see it. It's 3.5 hours. It's 3 hours and 34 minutes. What are we doing?
Ridiculous.
Wicked. The acting was horrible. Nickel Boys, I've heard good things. The Substance looks fascinating. I kind of want to see that. Conclave. The reviews I saw on Conclave were good, but I was like, that doesn't seem like a Best Picture nominee. Like, you know, I just Emily Perez always gets so much buzz, and I'm like, I bet you I'm gonna see the movie like in the next week, and I'm probably gonna be like, it was okay. Like, you know, and then look at some of these other nominees that Will put on here. I mean, there's some that are interesting, like, or some that got some pub, like Alien Romulus, Inside Out 2 is interesting, Wild Robot was really good from what I heard. I got to see that. Gladiator 2. Of course, we did Gladiator for a reason. Just these different slabs of nominees. And it feels like, yeah, you have some that people are interested in. But, like, I'll bet you, like, $100 that a majority of people will not go out and see The Brutalist. Nobody wants to see a 3.5-hour movie in theaters. No. I couldn't make myself do it, you know? So
I don't want to see a 3.5-hour movie, period.
And especially a slow, yeah, exactly. And especially a slow A24 movie. Like, I like those movies. And
that's why I hate Avatar. I couldn't care less about Avatar. It was too long, too boring.
I'm one of the few people that actually enjoys
Avatar,
that.
Avatar is so overrated for me.
I think it's, you know,
Avatar
it's
is so overrated for me.
I think yeah, me that's too. Fair, but I love it. No, but Will, let me get your take on this. Like, Oscars in general, I mean, you put the nominations list for just in general what's been, you know, really highly nominated this year. I mean, as a whole, the nominations list are never that good, even for us movie guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I looked at the nominations. I'm like, okay, some of the movies I've seen, some of the different scenes, some of the movies I haven't. I heard about it, never seen it. Some of them, I guess I heard about it, but I didn't hear good reviews. It's like, I don't know. I feel like it's this list is sort of weak. You have some gems here and there. I thought Inside Out 2 was arguably a gem that overseed the first one, in my opinion. Because of it can reach the kids and also adults as well about anxiety and the problems of anxiety. And the others, like, man, I heard about Wicked, but I heard that was mostly a musical and people were singing out in the song in the theater. If I was there, I probably would freaking rip my ears out.
I'm sorry. So I'm telling you, Wicked, as much as people liked it and I saw it in theaters, it's not for everybody. It's one of those films that genuinely is not for everybody. You have to be a very specific audience member. And even I was like, Ariana Grande is not good in this movie at all. She's just not well casted at all. And I was like, what is going on?
She's not an actress, period.
And she's nominated for Best Actress. And she was bad.
Oh, my God. Oh, not an actress, bro.
But
yeah, like Kingdom of Planet of the Apes, that sounds something. Like Nosferatu, like there's some good one. Alien Romulus probably get my vote. Probably have the best picture.
Thank you. I still want to see it.
Like,
I still
want to
see Alien Romulus. Oh god!
No, but basically, even with you, Will, you're just like, I don't know half of these movies. Some of them I like. And some of them I'm just like, what? Why are they even in here? Right? Pretty much. Like, pretty much where we're at here, too.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. Like, I feel like I have a hot take here. I feel like 2024 movies, I don't know, just hasn't been hitting that much lately. Like the predecessor, yeah. Like 2023, 2020, like other movies, like other years, they had like better, like, select group of movies. I just feel like 2024 is a miss to me.
No, I thought it was a dud too. I thought it was pretty awful. Shane, do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the nominees right now. I haven't seen a single one of these yet. Like, that's just how uninterested I've been. And I mean, I'm reading about some of the plot synopsises brief log lines, if you will, for them. And, you know, I can't say any of these are like, oh, wow, I need to see this right now. Except Dune 2. I mean, you know, that'll be good. But
I haven't heard of more than half of these. So.
Fair.
Yeah, me neither.
See, like, what is that? Like, we even like movies, and we don't even know half of them that get put on the nominations list.
Like, what the hell is Memoir of a Snail? What three people decided to watch that movie? excuse me? The thing is, you can't put it on a best, you can't put it on a nomination list, but maybe three people watched it. You can't.
Weirdly, I have heard of this movie, and I was planning on seeing it and didn't. You know why? Because it was only
showed.
And you know what's funny? They only showed it in one theater in downtown Seattle, and I was like, I'm not traveling and paying $15 for that.
What does that tell you? Like, nobody watched it. I don't care for the Dune movies. Alien Romulus I wanted to see. Nosferatu I wanted to see. Don't care about Wicked. Don't know the other ones except for Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes that I wanted to see. Basically, there's only four movies in here I cared to see. Alien Romulus, Nosferatu, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, and Gladiator 2. Those are the only movies I care to watch. And quite frankly, those are like the four movies I actually know anything about. I know the story of Wicked, but Wicked's a chick flick.
It's a chick flick, but it also is. Oh, I hate to
it's
say
like
that.
A,
I hate
it's like a prequel to the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
No, I haven't even
seen chick flick. But...
Okay, wait, I will say. Okay, I gotta be honest. That movie, as much as I like Wicked, that movie is very like. It's very Oscar baity because it's kind of snobby. Like you really have to, like you. This sounds bad because I a lot of people that I talk to, just casual moviegoers, love that film, and I'm like, again, I liked it, but I was like, bro, this is so poorly cast. Like, what are we doing? Like, and it's like, and then the Oscar noms come out, and it's like, oh yeah, like Best Actress, Ariana Grande, really. She didn't even have that good of a performance. Like, I don't get this. I don't understand it. And it's like, and again, I think my overall thing with the Oscars, just as a whole, right, is shouldn't the point of this award show be, these are the movies that people cared about. These are the movies that people didn't see that we think you should see, not because of some statement or Wicked because it's, you know, whatever, it's a musical, whatever. And again, there are some here that I highly recommend, like Complete Unknown. I loved it. I loved every piece of that movie. Just as an example of like a film buff movie, like a Complete Unknown's a good example. But like, why are we not, like, why are we putting in these movies that also, let me phrase this as well before you finish. Most of these movies have controversies for AI, for how things are interpreted. Why are you making casual moviegoers watch movies that have controversies in them that they're probably not going to like anyway? I just don't understand it at all. I don't get it. And especially this year, I think.
Yeah. You know, not that a movie can't have, like, you know, a statement or a message or whatever. But it's just a lot of movies. It's like it feels so forced and like it's just completely separate from the actual point of the movie. It's just like, all right, I don't need you to lecture me about society all the time. Like, I got it. All right. You know, and. Like, a great example of that, for instance, is Moonlight, which won in 2016 or 17. I don't feel like it should have won Best Picture, but was it correct to be nominated? Yeah, absolutely. Because, yes, it had a statement, but, like, it actually, like, had something to say that, like, had substance. It wasn't just, you know, oh, here's this great movie and this plot, and and by the way, you know, women's rights for all, you know, it's which, yes, is obviously,
which, by the way, that's a great example of what the majority of these movies are. They're just statements without actually telling a story. Which, they're just like saying
again,
a statement.
I'm not opposed to having those messages in movies. I believe in all that stuff, obviously.
They're worthwhile things, but the movie needs to be enjoyed, not forced down your throat. Right.
And it needs to, or like Black Panther is another great example of, I think that movie was a very clever way of...
Yeah, of, a very cultural movie.
Yes, and a very, you know, kind of powerful way to show that. And having... you know, this very wealthy, you know, abundant country.
Wakanda.
Wakanda and the
forever.
Villain being,
Wakanda.
And the villain being just, you know.
R.I.P. Chadwick Boseman.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. We miss you, King. Yeah, and, you know, and the villain being just a normal guy from Oakland. You know, and how he comes in there and he's just like, hey, I don't know if you know this, but while you guys are having a good time in here, I've been, like, surviving by the skin of my teeth in this rough neighborhood and, you know, and just, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, yeah, okay, that makes sense, and it's powerful. But then there's some movies like Wreck-It Ralph 2 where...
oh, boy.
Where they're like, there's a scene where she meets all the Disney princesses and just completely unrelated. And she's like, yeah. And were you rescued by a strong man? Cause we're too weak. It's like, shut up. We got it.
Right? It's Laura's character. It's Laura's character.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, it's like, yeah, we get it. Okay. Damsel in distress. Like, you don't need to be that on the nose about it. And just, you know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
That just annoys me.
And the point I kind of want to finish off of is, like, this to me is not a political conversation. What it is a conversation about how.
No, not at all.
No. What it is to me is a conversation, particularly with the Oscars. To me, it's a conversation of how Hollywood wants us to view them and how Hollywood projects itself, because that is the point of the Oscars to some extent, is to say, this is our best work. This is what we believe is our best work. And unfortunately, I think we've all come to this conclusion. And you know, we look at movies that we saw like Coda last year and this movie Free Solo, two very important messages, two very important conversations to have that were just incredible movies in their own right. But there's a reason we've really only done like two, you know, really interesting Oscar movies, at least like outwardly, because where we've mentioned like these actually won Oscars. Because outside of it, none of these movies, you know, make the Oscars even worthy of bringing up, because they don't invoke something interesting. Like when we talk about Joker, for instance, yeah, we mentioned that, you know, it was nominated, but we didn't focus on that because that wasn't the point of the film. So anyway, you know, that's kind of our just general point with this is like, I think just in general, like in looking at the nominations list this year, I think number one, what Will said, just to wrap this up, number one, what Will said that this has been a bad year for movies. I think that's very, very true.
Yeah.
And two, just why are you picking these? If you want to show the best of filmmaking for the year, why are these the choices? Why are these the choices that most of us or all of us here are just like, I've never heard of this, I've never heard of that, you know, who's seeing this, who's seeing that? And I'm like, who's seeing a 3.5-hour movie in an A24 movie that's 3.5 hours long, and it's probably pretty good, but like, who's doing that, you know? So that's kind of the overall gist I think that we're trying to get across, is like the Oscars need, and it always has tried to say, we're trying to reinvent ourselves, and then every year it's the same crap that gets nominated. They don't reinvent themselves at all. And it ends up being, hey, the biggest news story is Will Smith slapping Chris Rock, and that's the night. And then this year, probably there's going to be nothing. I'm just like, okay, that was a pointless show. I mean, Conan's going to make it fun, but other than that, who cares? Like, and thank God they don't have any musical numbers, too.
Can I just say, when it comes to award shows for movies, I love the Golden Globes most of all because I feel like they get movies more right as far as like what are actually good. and also it's just, it's a lot more entertaining in my opinion. The, you know, they had this year, they had Nikki Glaser, who was fantastic.
One of my favorite comedians of all time. I was a huge fan of her before she got famous. I love her so much.
Dude, she is fantastic. I'm with you, Robert. I'm very happy that she's finally getting her flowers. Cause she crushes it. it's just a better vibe as opposed to the, you know, the Oscars. It's always just like one of the late night talk show hosts, and it's like, okay, well,
or those years where they had no hosts and it was the most boring thing you'll ever see in your entire life. Just God. All right. Well, for Shane, for Will, for Brandon, for myself, next week is our most fun week of podcasting ever. This is the week we all look forward to, Pro Bowl week. Pro Bowl week, we're doing a really stupid movie. We decided to just do a stupid movie and watch a stupid movie and then record like a 10-minute set on it. And this year, their first selection is Who Killed Captain Alex, which is this really ridiculous Ugandan action movie.
Ugandan's first action film.
Which makes absolutely
as the director says.
Which absolutely makes no sense for any vibe of this podcast, but whatever. Then we have the award show, which I think we'll do. So I think Friday night we're doing the Who Killed Captain Alex. Saturday we're doing the awards, and then Sunday, I know Brandon, you love every year when we do this, 3 hours of just unfiltered craziness, watching the Pro Bowl with a bunch of our friends who have been along the way. With us, from the TCA guys to hopefully some of the Sports Ethos guys to just whomever and whoever. And it's just 3 hours of the most just insane off-the-cuff commentary of a stupid flag football game you'll ever hear in your entire life.
Yeah, of the football year, pretty much. That's the highlight of our year. That's our party show.
That's our celebration show. So that is our week. Next week, our most fun week of the entire year. And then the day after the Super Bowl, we will be here recording and posting right away our reactions to the Super Bowl in full, Monday night, the day after the Super Bowl. But yeah, we will see you next week. We're recording the Who Killed Captain Alex segment. That will probably be at the end of the NFL awards. I'll patch that together. So
What a way to end. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, that's that. You know what's funny? We haven't had Discord problems in weeks, since midway through the season, and yet somehow on the last show before Pro Bowl and Super Bowl, and it's like, oh yeah, perfect. Cuts out right as we're gonna end it. Insane.
Yep, pretty much it cuts out that we're just gonna. But I mean, that's the thing. We're going long, but I hope that we don't have to jump out of Discord or whatever for those 3 hours, because that show, I mean, it doesn't matter. But yeah, it's gonna be a fun time. So yeah, Pro Bowl week is gonna be a great time. But yeah, for Will, for Shane, for myself, for Brandon, we will see you all next week for just an absolute cornucopia of shows. So we'll see you all then.
Oh, big word. Love it.
Now we're using that college degree.
Yeah, finally.
Perfect.
Utopia.